Healthy alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. My name is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternatives is about is that most of us really want to reach optimum levels of health and wellness. We want to feel better, enjoy life, live longer, and be healthy. And that's what we attempt to bring you in each of my shows. Now, every week I usually begin by talking about an issue or concern that you should know about because it can have a real impact on your health. And then a little later, I'll also then talk about a healthy breakthrough, something that you need to know that can really help you in your life, for you and your family and loved ones. This year, I want to combine both of them together. And so I want to talk about stroke as the issue area because it is the third most common cause of death in this country, in that there are 800,000 new cases annually. Another factor that people are not aware of is that it's also the leading cause of adult disability, because once somebody has a stroke and it can occur at any age, victims most often are left paralyzed, unable to talk or carry out simple tasks of everyday life. Now, stroke is actually receiving very little attention from the medical community, and one of the key players in this is a Dr. Justin Zinvin, and he said stroke is really an emergency. There's a treatment, except you most likely won't get it. That's the issue area. Now, let's look at this from the other side of the equation as the breakthrough. Let me tell you a story. There was a neurologist who went to school with Dr. Zinvin, and his name is Boris Vern. In 2009, he had lost sensation in his left leg, and then the whole left side of his body, his speech became slurred, and he was having a stroke. His son called 911, and paramedics came and rushed him to the hospital. And Vern had known about TPA, that it could be used to treat most strokes, because Justin Zinvin was a fellow Feinberg School of Medicine student with him at Northwestern University. And Zinvin is one of the key scientists involved in developing and championing TPA. So inside 90 minutes, he received an injection of TPA, and within an hour after that, he was back to normal. He walked out of the hospital a few days later completely recovered. Now, that's pretty powerful stuff, because TPA can actually help more than half of all stroke victims in the United States, and according to the most recent estimates, only 3 to 8.5% actually receive it. Thousands can be helped, but they're not receiving it because there's been controversy over TPA. And the controversy, even though TPA has been approved by the FDA for the purpose of being injected as an effective treatment for stroke, it's been an uphill battle because, first of all, you need people to know what a stroke is, because if they don't get to the hospital in time, and you've got a window of opportunity there of about 3 hours, but you also need physician education, because a lot of doctors think TPA therapy is a lot more dangerous than it actually is, and insurance companies and Medicare have to pay for the real costs of it. There was a landmark human trial of TPA conducted between 1991 and 1995, And the stroke victims who were treated within 3 hours, there was a stunning success rate of 11 to 13%, what they called absolute benefit. In a normal study, 2% absolute benefit is considered a good outcome. This was 11 to 13%. And the time of treatment is where we run into a problem, because a lot of emergency physicians thought it would be impossible to treat patients safely and quickly, and neurologists are not used to making emergency consultations and quick decisions. And so what we've got is a system that is looking at TPA and not using it at the levels and ways that it could really help people. Times are starting to change. Zinvin was in a debate on TPA in St. Louis in 2007. A doctor in the audience stood up and said he did not use TPA because, as he explained, I work in a little hospital and we just don't have the staffing. Zinvin's reply was, if you don't have the capacity for doing this sort of thing, then you should take down the sign at your hospital that says emergency room. The audience cheered. When you go to the hospital, if you or a loved one get a stroke, first thing you need to demand is you want TPA. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking to Chef Ann Cooper. Chef Cooper is a chef, of course, nutrition services director, consultant, author, public speaker. She's an advocate working to feed children fresh, delicious, and nourishing food in schools. She works on an effort called The Lunchbox at thelunchbox.com. She's concerned with getting salad bars in schools and has been featured in The New Yorker, New York Times, Washington Post, ABC's Nightline, CNN. And we're going to be talking about the whole notion of quality foods for the kids in school in just a moment. If you want to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you can click on the globe on this page, or you can go to teplitz.com, T-E-P-L-I-T-Z.com, and you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. I do a monthly e-newsletter that's health, nutrition, wellness-oriented, has different information from healthy alternatives. You can find that at teplitz.com. Click on the home button, and you'll be able to sign up there. Before I bring on my guest, I'd like to pause for this message.
Anyone who has migraines knows that they are almost totally debilitating and hard, if not impossible, to treat. Or should we say they were impossible to treat? Dr. Jerry Teplitz DVD, Instant Headache and Migraine Relief, delivers on its promise with a 5-minute migraine cure and a 90-second headache treatment. Learn this natural way to get rid of your migraine with the 2,000-year-old Japanese technique of shiatsu, a pressure point method that's simple and immediately effective. The Instant Headache and Migraine Relief DVD also features bonus techniques for treating sore throats, stiff necks, and shoulder pain. No pills, no herbs, no waiting, just relief. Jack Canfield, co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, learned these techniques from Dr. Teplitz and says, these techniques are so practical, so powerful, so simple. They've done it for me and my family. They can do it for you too. Click on the DVD cover on the page in front of you for more information. Instant Headache and Migraine Relief comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. There's no reason to wait. Click on it now.
My guest today is Chef Ann Cooper. She's a chef, nutrition services director, consultant, author, public speaker, and advocate. And what she's looking at as a chef is working to feed children fresh, delicious, and nourishing food. While working full-time as nutrition services director in Boulder, Colorado, Ann founded the Food Family Farming Foundation, which goes by F3. And that was in 2009 to help bring about more expedient school food changes and to help make better food in schools more mainstream.
Her efforts have led to what she calls the Lunchbox, which is on the site. It's healthy tools to help all students. And she's also involved with Let's Move Salad Bars to School, an initiative that has the goal of getting 6,000 salad bars over the next 3 years into schools to allow children to have more fresh fruits and vegetables. And it has also been featured in the New Yorker, New York Times, Washington Post, Time Magazine, ABC's Nightly, Line, CNN, and CBS Morning Show. And Anne, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
Thanks for having me here.
So how did you first get involved with the notion of wanting to help kids eat better?
You know, I'm a very unlikely advocate for school food. I really spent almost my entire career as sort of a white tablecloth celebrity chef, you know, cooking very high-end food. But I've written 4 books, and my second one was Bitter Harvest, and I wrote it in the late 90s, and I really started thinking about why food made us sick and how it was making our kids sick. And I started really thinking about those issues, and as I had written the book and was thinking about it, I got a call from a school in New York asking me if I would come be the director of wellness and nutrition and executive chef.
I originally talk about perfect timing, huh?
Yeah, it really was. And I originally said, no, you know, I'm not going to be a lunch lady. And then I got over myself. They called back. And eventually I went down and worked there. And the rest, sort of, as they say, is history.
Well, go a little bit more into the history, because working at one school is different than trying to change a whole nation.
It certainly is. And one of the things that happened is when I went down to work at this private school, it was really well funded. So by and large, in many ways, it was almost like working in a restaurant. We had an almost unlimited food cost. I had all these great chefs working with me. We were serving amazing food. And during that time, Alice Waters came to visit and was just, you know, really overwhelmed with what we were doing, because so much of it is what she had been dreaming was possible in school. And so she asked me to come out and work for her in Berkeley. And I eventually, in 2005, became the director of nutrition services for the Berkeley Unified School District. And I did that for 4 years. And then I was recruited to come to Boulder, where I am now the director of food services for Boulder Valley School District. So I've been doing this for over 10 years now.
So while you're working in your kind of full-time job, you're also focusing on getting this message out at a much broader level, I gather.
That's true. I have actually 3 day jobs. One is director of food services for Boulder. Another is I have my own foundation, the Food Family Farming Foundation. We're working on a national level. And as you said, our 2 main projects are the Lunchbox and Let's Move Salad Bars to Schools. And I also have a consulting company that works directly with school districts that are looking for additional help in trying to move their food from processed food to scratch cooking.
So why does it really matter from your standpoint to move to quality school lunches? Isn't, you know, what the FDA, not the FDA, USDA gives in terms of the nutritional foods, isn't that enough?
You know,
I know the answer, but go ahead.
The USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, oversees the National School Lunch Program through one of its departments, Food and Nutrition Services. And the guidelines have been pretty low. And frankly, chicken nuggets, tater tots, canned fruit cocktail, and chocolate milk with high fructose corn syrup is actually a reimbursable meal that I could be paid for to feed kids day in and day out. Now, with the last reauthorization of the last National School Lunch Act, which was December 2nd last year, we saw new guidelines going to be implemented. None of them have. But interestingly, in the news today, a couple of senators, one from Maine and one from Colorado, got an amendment passed in the Senate to kind of undo some of the stuff that was passed to really help kids have better nutrition in school. So it's a real political issue, and the bar so far has remained very low.
So what's your viewpoint as to why quality foods make a difference to our kids?
You know, the CDC has said that of the children born in the year 2000, 1 out of every 3 Caucasians and 1 out of every 2 African Americans and Hispanics will contract diabetes in their lifetime, many before they graduate high school. And they've gone further to say that this generation of children born in the year 2000, the 11 and 12-year-olds across the country, will be the first generation in our country's history to die at a younger age than their parents. And it's really because of what we feed them. And I think we really have to understand how serious this is. I was at a conference the other day, and they presented the fact that 45% of all Americans are now overweight or obese. I mean, this is killing our kids. And we've had research that shows us that, you know, that we have kids with high blood pressure and cancer rates are skyrocketing. And it's just, you know, we go on and on and on what's happening with kids and food. And it's really unconscionable. And we as a nation have to prioritize what we feed kids because we're actually making them sick.
And besides the whole notion of what we're feeding them in schools, we're also cutting out exercise phys ed classes and things like that. And so they don't get to move any part of their body other than, you know, pressing buttons on a computer.
Well, that's really true. I mean, whole school districts like Chicago had banned recess. I mean, school districts all across the nation, and especially because of No Child Left Behind, have cut out physical activity. I mean, when I was a kid, we had the President's Council on Physical Fitness. I mean, and now, as you say, you know, we spend, you know, one out of every four meals in our country is eaten in a car. I mean, in a car. And one out of every four meals in fast food, and one out of every four meals in front of a blue screen. Game Boy, iPod, iPhone. So kids are really, as you say, they're exercising their thumbs and their hands, and the rest is going on hips and bellies.
Yep, literally.
Literally.
And so how do you see, and is there research out there viewing a healthy school lunch as being a key dimension of learning?
You know, I will say anecdotally, and I've actually heard Arnie Duncan, Secretary of Education, and Tom Vilsack, Secretary of Agriculture, both say that if we want to close the achievement gap in this country, we have to close the nutrition gap. Anecdotally, I will tell you that I have teachers all the time saying that if kids eat better, they can learn and think better. The only research I know of has come out of some of Jamie Oliver's programs in the UK, and they've actually been able to show academic improvement with nutritional improvement.
Well, you've also got research that goes back quite a few years and it's been proven several times with the Feingold diet, if you're familiar with that, which is getting the kids who are hyperactive, attention deficit, all those letters, getting them off of preservatives, chemicals in the food, all that stuff. And lots of the kids go back to being actually normal again. I think there's some research out there that's saying when you're giving processed food like you're talking about, you're giving them a loaded weight to sink them to the bottom of being able to do anything almost.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really true. There's a lot of research that shows that if you feed kids whole foods, fresh vegetables, fresh food, whole grains, healthy proteins, that they will actually thrive, and that a lot of the issues we have with ADD and ADHD go away. But we're also seeing a huge increase in cancer in kids, and much of it's attributable to what they eat as well, of course, as what's in the environment. But we just have to feed kids better. And I'm not talking crazy food. I mean, literally, fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, whole grains, and healthy protein. It's not crazy. It's just real food.
Now, how do you feel about, because you're talking about fresh foods, but I think there's a difference between like organic fresh versus commercial fresh in terms of the nutrient value in them. Is that something that you're seeing also, and which direction would you want to go?
Well, you know, in all things being equal, I would like kids to eat fresh organic food. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, not all organic food is better than, you know, than better than other. You know, I mean, there's organic gummy bears, for goodness sake. So it's not just
right.
Organic is good. It has to be real food. The challenge we have in schools is that most schools have less than a dollar to spend on the cost of the food. So when you have less than a dollar and the USDA says that there's five categories you have to serve every day, fruit, vegetable, whole grain, protein, and milk. When you have all those things and you have a dollar, you know, organic food is by and large out of your price range. I mean, we do make some choices here in Boulder, and certainly in some other school districts, they're picking some items that they can either serve organically all the time or once in a while. And it's really important. I mean, conventional agriculture uses 17 to 20 billion pounds of pesticides each year. And, you know, what we're seeing is that all of this is going into our kids. So there's this huge amount of chemicals going into our kids' bodies, and we just really have to stop that.
Are you, when you're sourcing foods for Boulder, are you able to eliminate GMO foods, or are they just too prevalent that you can't even go that route even?
Well,
and for the listeners, GMO is genetically modified organism, is what it means.
GMO food is so prevalent in our food supply that two-thirds to three-quarters of what's actually sold in grocery stores have genetically modified organisms or genetically engineered items in them. And, you know, there's no mandatory labeling. So we don't really know. The only way you know that you're GE or GMO free is if your item is organic. And there are some projects now where they will list it, but by and large, it's really hard to tell. And again, given that we have such a low amount of money, a dollar, or in Boulder, $1.15, to spend on the cost of a lunch, you know, you really can't make a priority out of organic because you can't afford it.
So before we continue, I'd like to remind you, you're listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net. And we'll be back with my guest, Chef Ann Cooper, in just a moment.
Every one of us is under stress from work, family, the economy, layoffs, the inability to retire. These are the realities today. Even if you're doing okay, we all have friends and relatives experiencing hard times. Hey, just watching the news can make you nervous. Make no mistake, there's nothing benign about stress. It can lead to high blood pressure, digestive problems, difficulty concentrating, and increased risk of disease. That's why Dr. Jerry Teplitz wrote the book Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. He presents easy, effective techniques to reduce stress, eliminate pain, relieve insomnia, and gain an overall sense of well-being. Managing Your Stress is fully illustrated and provides hands-on, proven methods you can use immediately. Dr. Teplitz knows how to cut to the chase. He begins working with you from the very first page of Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. Click on the cover that you see on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you and buy it now. It comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee, and it will change your life.
So my guest today is Chef Ann Cooper. Ann is a chef, nutrition services director, consultant, author, public speaker, and advocate. She, in effect, has three different full-time jobs, basically, and she's looking at working to really feed children fresh, delicious, and nourishing food for them. She works as a full-time nutrition service director in Boulder, Colorado, and she's founded the Food Family Farming Foundation, which goes by F3, to help expedite school food change. And she's also involved with a program called Let's Move Salad Bars to School, which is aiming to get 6,000 salad bars in schools over the next 3 years. So, Ann, what would a healthy school lunch program look like?
A healthy school lunch program really looks like non-processed foods. So, for instance, every day you would serve fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, whole grains, healthy proteins. You would have a salad bar in every single school, K-12, with fresh items on it. You would serve, you know, clean, and by that I mean chemical-free as much as possible. You'd have a priority on local procurement when you could. And you really wouldn't see processed food. So instead of chicken nuggets, you'd have roast chicken. Instead of tater tots, you'd have roast or mashed potatoes. And you'd really have this delicious but simple food. You'd also eliminate things like trans fats, high fructose corn syrup, colors, dyes, and chemicals like that. So my idea of a healthy food system in schools.
And do you, when you're doing consulting, provide menus for the schools to be able to use so that they can figure out what to make and how to make it?
Absolutely. And we actually showcase menus and recipes on our website, thelunchbox.org. And on the website, you could actually look at our recipes. You can explode the recipes. So, for instance, if the recipes are in there for 100, but you need to make 500 portions, they'll explode. They have nutritionals. They have videos to show you how to actually make them. So we've worked really hard to be able to give schools the tools they need to start making change so that every school can serve healthy food to kids.
Has anybody looked to see how many schools are picking up the notion of what you're talking about, of creating a really healthy school lunch program for the kids?
You know, by and large, it's not on an individual school basis. What we see is school districts making change. There's about 100,000 schools in the country, but there's only 15,000 school districts. And unless it's a charter or private school, an entire school district will make change. Now, I think that because the First Lady has taken up this mantle and because there's been so much press and media about healthy school food, that a lot of school districts are starting to make change. However, in many school districts, it's very slow.
And in terms of making those change in a school district, what kind of obstacles are they encountering when they're looking to redesign their program?
You know, there are five major obstacles or challenges, as I call them, to changing school food. Food, finance, facilities, human resources, and marketing. Food, where do you get it and make sure it's good? Finances, how do you pay for it, you know, with that dollar or $1.10 or maybe even only 95 cents? Facilities, you know, many schools don't have kitchens anymore, or if they do, all the equipment's broken. Human resources, how do you train, you know, hundreds of people on your staff if they've been opening boxes of chicken nuggets to cook raw roast chicken? And finally, how do you get the kids to eat it? Because we see big business, you know, spending millions and millions of dollars every year to try and get our kids to eat foods of minimal or no nutrient value. So it's really challenging, and school districts have to really attack all of these areas at once.
How do you get over the kids saying, no, I'm not going to eat that, yucko, kinds of response?
You know, you really need to work with the kids. We do a number of things. We have a program called Make a Rainbow, where we go into all of our schools and give the kids, not only who bought lunch, but who brought lunch, free salads. And when they get their salads, we tell them they have to have three colors, not including white. And when they eat it, they get a sticker. And this is really great in elementary and middle school. But we work with the kids on what it looks like to eat a rainbow. We also do tasting. And for the older kids, we do chef demos and cooking classes and even Iron Chef competitions. So it's really about working with the kids. And further to that, it's really important to collaborate with garden programs so that kids are actually growing the food as well.
And by the way, you may be aware that the U.S. Army is serving healthier food and actually having their in basic training and having the drill sergeants at the end of the line. And if the guy didn't pick up an apple or the gal didn't pick up an apple, they send them back to get the nutritional stuff, and so that they're actually serving at a higher level because they're finding it affects the performance of their recruits.
Well, one thing that's really interesting is when the National School Lunch Program was first started about 65 years ago, it was started because of national security, because coming out of World War I and into World War II, there were too few recruits who were actually physically fit enough to fight because of malnourishment. And so that's part of the big reason we saw the National School Lunch Program start. And to your point, today we're too fat to fight. So we went from, you know, in really just a decade, a few decades from being too malnourished to fight in the armies to now being too fat to fight in the armies.
Do you have stuff on the website, and it's thelunchbox.org, on how the school staff can work with the students to build this notion of a healthy food culture in their schools?
We have all kinds of materials for education, engagement, and training on both websites, and it's really important. I mean, hands-on experiential learning in cooking classes, in gardening classes, doing tastings, make the rainbow days, chef demos, all of it's really, really important. I mean, if we want to change our children's relationship to food, we really have to engage them in the process.
So you're actually creating kind of the new notion of when they used to have home economic classes in schools. I don't know if they actually call them that anymore, but you're creating kind of the new home economics for people to be and kids to be individually understanding what they need to do to stay healthy and well.
Well, not exactly. They're, by and large, we're not doing academic curriculum, and I think those early you know, home ec classes were academic curriculum. But what we're really trying to provide is experiential learning for the kids, especially the younger ones, but at every grade level, around food and farming, and that connection, you know, that's so empirical between, you know, what we eat and who we are and how we feel. And that's really what we're working with kids on.
Now, what can somebody who is a parent and has kids going to school, what can they do to help create changes if they're one of those schools that you said are going kind of slow or not at all?
You know, parents have a lot of opportunity to help change, both at home and in schools. But in schools, what parents can do is really understand what their system is. So every school district since 2006 has had to have a wellness policy in place. Many of them are outdated. Many of them are collecting dust on an administrator's shelf. So a parent can go and ask the district for their wellness policy. And after you read it and understand how good it or not good it is, go to your child's school and eat school lunch. And then get your like-minded friends together and go to the school board, who really holds all the resources and really does make these decisions, and go to the school board and say, you know, I don't want this kind of food for my kid. I want better food for my kid. And through that and through empowering the parents and then the school board and superintendent, you can start to make change happen. My parents have a real opportunity at home. I mean, if we want to change what kids eat in school, they also have to change what they eat at home. That means parents should be shopping with their kids, cooking with their kids, growing something with their kids, even if it's in a little cup, turning off the television, make real food, sitting at a dining room table, an important part of the day. And when children start to understand that a core pillar of family life is good food, healthy eating, and exercise, then they will bring that to school. I mean, if kids at home are only eating fast food, and then I'm trying to serve them fresh broccoli, it's a real challenge. So we have to work together, parents and school food service people, to really change how we feed our kids.
And when you have a president, past president anyway, when he was president, I guess he said it, I hate broccoli. That doesn't help.
Or President Reagan, who made ketchup a vegetable in the National School Lunch Program. I mean, right. It was a short-lived thing. But still, I mean, finally, we have a president who talks about kids and health and food all in one sentence, a first lady who is an amazing cheerleader on these issues. The problem is that with the First Lady's Let's Move campaign, there's no real policy or money behind it, and then you have the Congress doing something ridiculous yesterday by passing an amendment that says that that basically turns back some of the nutritional guidelines that says we really should serve potatoes as a vegetable every day, which is ridiculous. So, you know, food is political, food is personal. There's a lot of money involved, and so it's hard to make these changes.
How on the salad bars and school program, by the way, for listeners, if you want more information about the Let's Move Salad Bars to Schools program, you go to saladbars2schools.com. So saladbars2schools, so .org. So how's that been working so far?
We have been very fortunate so far. By the end of this month, we will have donated 1,000 salad bars to schools across the country, and that's in our first year of fundraising. So it's going really great. But we still, at this point, have 800 salad bars that are waiting to be funded. So we can always use more funding. We can always also use more people who want funding. But we're working really hard to make sure that we get salad bars in as many schools as possible. It's one of the best ways that we can feed our kids fresh, healthy food.
What are you funding with the in terms of the salad bars? Is it the physical salad bar stand, or are you funding what's going in there, or both?
We just fund the capital equipment. And
okay.
If our listeners want to go to the website, saladbars2schools.org, you can actually see an equipment list. You can see a picture of the salad bars. So we actually give the schools the salad bar itself, which is a value of about $3,500, and we help them then start their program.
Great. So if you want more information about what Chef Ann Cooper is involved with, go to thelunchbox.org, and also you can go to saladbars2schools.org. And thank you for being a guest on Healthy Alternatives today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Next week's my guest is going to be Donna Fisher. Donna is a business owner, best-selling author, and certified speaking professional. More importantly, she's an introvert who learned how to network And for over 18 years, she's been teaching others how to effectively communicate, connect, and create opportunities. She's written the books Power Networking, People Power, Professional Network for Dummies. And she and I co-authored a book that's coming out November 16th, Switched On Networking, Balance Your Brain for Networking Success. I'll be talking to Donna about networking and the Switched On Networking book and how this can really impact your life. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz. You can find out more about me at teplitz.com or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.